The Three-Cornered Hat by Terence Clark. Trevor thought it the perfect name for the place. A large room on the third floor of an old brick building on Hudson Street at 14th. The structure bore a resemblance to the famous Triangle Flatiron Building in the sense that it was shaped like one of the paper airplanes that Trevor had enjoyed as a first grader. Pointed at one end, wide at the other, the building would, were it not a 19th-century Manhattan ruin, soar from a little boy's fingers. While the Flatiron is immortal, the Three-Cornered Hat building appeared sawed off at three floors and to have been gathered into its present shape by machines pushing around large piles of rubble. It was layered above the sidewalk with the tatters of old paper flyers, and all its street-level windows were barred with rusted iron. No sign identified the building. The only indication that the Three-Cornered Hat itself, a dance hall for Argentine tango, even existed in the building, was its name handwritten in pencil on the back of somebody's business card, along with the detail, third floor, with an upwardly directed arrow also written in pencil. The card was taped to the front of a bank of mailboxes, half of which had no doors. Evidently, no other tenants occupied the building. The Hudson Street entrance was an implacable iron door with no windows. It did, however, have a doorknob. Is this it? Because he had never danced to the Three-Cornered Hat, Trevor stood outside the building looking up. Lights gleamed from the third floor, and he heard what sounded like faraway suggestions, perhaps emanating from an old crystal radio set of very old Argentine tango. He tried the door, which was locked. He pushed a doorbell button a half dozen times, until finally a woman's voice murmured from the speaker box above the button. "Yeah? Well, I'm here for tango." A buzzer rang, and Trevor put his shoulder to the door, which eventually gave way. He hurried up the first three steps of the wooden stairway before the door shut, a bit like a sideways guillotine, Trevor mused. The stairs leaned to the right and left, here and there on the way up, covered with very old green linoleum. Various messages decorated the walls, rendered either in grease pencil or spray paint or gouged. As he got closer to the door to the third floor, Trevor heard more and more tango, and his soul began to quiet. The music softened his misgivings. He heard laughter. Pushing aside a curtain, he entered the Three-Cornered Hat. Trevor had once been a poet, but had given that up as a lost leader profession. He had then co-founded a startup, marketing handmade original fashion collectibles, earrings, perfume bottles, silver cigarette cases, from a website that his friend Emilio had designed. After his market studies and focus groups, Trevor had determined that their customers, well, there were the gay men to consider too, would all be women under 30 years old, a surprise to Trevor's mother, who owned a number of the kind of collectibles that he wanted to sell, and who couldn't imagine that anyone would be interested in this old stuff anymore, even though it's so beautiful. His mother was the principal source of funding for the company, having invested $7,500. Trevor knew that the interest in his trinkets could be considerable, though, and he and Emilio, who came from Buenos Aires originally and, like Trevor, was a recent NYU MBA, had founded the company. All Trevor's models were girls from the Fashion Institute of Technology. His photographers, too. The company itself, Zowie Collectibles, wasn't going great guns just yet. Indeed, they hadn't really made a profit of any sort for Trevor's mother. But Trevor, who was ever insistent on possibilities and opportunities, knew that it was just a matter of time. Also, he and Emilio were only 25, so he figured that they had quite a lot of time. "Trevor," Emilio held up a bottle, "how about a glass of wine?" The Three-Cornered Hat filled a space about twice the size of Trevor's studio apartment. It had the same triangle shape as the building itself, with a wood dance floor and windows on the two angled sides of the room. Five slim iron pillars, placed in various parts on the dance floor, formed part of the building's support. They added an element of possible injury to the dancing. While normally the tango couples would dance in a circle around the perimeter of the floor, all in the same direction, at the Three-Cornered Hat they would have to weave and bob, As the evening progressed into early morning and the effects of wine were added to the beauties and intensities of the music, the pillars would very much come into play. Emilio had brought the bottle of Malbec and two plastic glasses. He poured a bit of the wine into each and handed a glass to Trevor. Both were dressed in Levi's and untucked sports shirts with rolled-up sleeves. Trevor felt particularly natty in his heavy black-rimmed glasses. Now and then, though, he wondered why it was that the young men who danced tango for the most part dressed this way. Startup slobs, really, he admitted, while the women clothed themselves with extraordinary attention to casual fashion. Even when they wore Levi's, the pants clung to them like fine, dark blue oil. But usually they wore dresses of the kind Trevor admired at Zara or the Anthropologie store in Chelsea Market. Their dresses brimmed with color, humor, and very successful attempts at sensuous beauty. While Trevor and Emilio's dance shoes always needed a shine, the stiletto-heeled shoes of most of the women at the three-cornered hat were so carefully designed and shaped for elegant dance that a major subject of conversation among the women was their shoes. They modeled them for each other. They laughed, envious and appreciative of such romantically clad feet. Music issued from the speakers at one end of the room. Trevor and Emilio danced with a number of the women with whom they had danced at other milongas. The room filled, and suddenly, spectacularly, Marianita Miró walked through the curtain. Trevor had seen her just once before, on the stage at Carnegie Hall. The Orpheus Chamber Orchestra was playing that night a selection of modern concert music from South America, so a few Villa-Lobos pieces, some danzas criollas of Alberto Ginastera, an arrangement of a tune by Violeta Parra. The orchestra devoted the rest of the concert to the Argentine Astor Piazzolla, and for several of the numbers, Marianita came on stage to dance. Her partner was an older man, a superb dancer, Trevor thought, but in a moment of electrified bedazzlement, Trevor watched Marianita as though the old man were barely there. He figured she was no more than 25 years old herself, yet she walked on stage with every suggestion of sensuality that had ever occurred to any woman. Her hair was close-cut like a flapper's and shined like ebony lacquer. She had the look of the Middle East. Lebanese, Trevor thought, or Iranian, the Middle East done up as a Bollywood musical. He could see her black eyes even from the back balcony, and Trevor hoped that his watching her so glaringly formed the reason for those eyes' obvious glimmering, slim, with small breasts enhanced by the Mediterranean marine blue dress she wore. She nonetheless had a back and a backside that composed themselves so curvaceously, one above the other, that when she moved in circles around the old man, still in his embrace, she yet looked free to Trevor, like a graceful cat of the African veldt, finely sculpted by whom? Trevor wondered. By the sun and the Iberian coast, by olive oil, the Spanish language, the Andes range and the mighty Pampas, by the dark insistence of a young, fantastically talented tanguera in full possession of herself and her own wishes. At Carnegie Hall, in the back balcony, he pulled himself from his astonishment to look up her name in the program. Marianita Miró. Now, at the three-cornered hat, she appeared impatiently perturbed. No. She shook her head as she preceded the same old man into the room. Che, déjame en paz. The utterance was loud enough to be heard over the tango music in the room. Those who had not quickly turned their heads, gaping at how she looked, now did so because of how she sounded. She's telling him to leave her alone, Emilio said. Somehow the tone of his translation also contained Emilio's amazed perusal of Marianita as she walked across the floor. And man, is she the answer. His eyes sparkled blue in the reflected pink and blue light of the room. To what? Trevor knew what Emilio would say. He didn't wait for it. Who's the old guy? Leopoldo Gaviota. But everyone just calls him Gaviota. He's Argentine. Well, of course. One of the greatest dancers of tango in the world. My grandmother Leila knew him many years ago, before he became Gaviota, she said. She danced with him when he was 20. He was always a dancer? She said that he was a journalist back then. At least that's what he told her. but she never saw anything he wrote. When she knew him, he was a dishwasher. Well, what did she call him? Polito, or hijo de puta, depending on her mood. Emilio grinned. My grandmother didn't like being mistreated. Gaviota, dressed in a black long-sleeved shirt, black slacks, and black suede dance shoes, walked behind Marianita like a sleek gangster. A godfather, Trevor mused. He was also wearing a pair of large wraparound sunglasses, and as he pursued Marianita, he took a pack of cigarettes from the pocket of his shirt. He continued speaking to her in very rapid-fire Spanish, which Trevor did not understand, only to get a similar dismissive response from Marianita. No! He lit one of the cigarettes, tossed the blown-out match onto the dance floor, and turned away from her to approach the bar where Trevor and Emilio were standing. Maestro, Emilio extended a hand. How about a little of that red? Gaviota grumbled in English. His sunglasses hid every aspect of his eyes, so that in the semi-darkness he resembled an attack helicopter. Of course. Emilio did not have a third glass, so he borrowed a paper cup from a small stack of cups on the bar. He poured out some Malbec and handed it to Gaviota, who turned away without another word. Ciao, Polito, Emilio whispered, toasting the retreating maestro with his own empty glass. Trevor placed a hand on his partner's shoulder. Yes, but he sure can dance. Hijo de puta. Emilio looked up toward the ceiling and beyond, at heaven. No le da. Trevor determined to meet Marianita. He worried, though, about her outburst of temper, which seemed to be continuing as she removed her coat and turned to the immediate crowd of women dancers that had gathered to greet her. She knew some of them, and the flurry of loud kisses and congratulatory laughter bubbling in two languages did little to hide the grim glance that she gave Gaviota, who had stopped at the edge of the dance floor. Sipping from his wine, he reveled disdainfully at the attention he was getting from so many dancers himself. He had spotted one of the other women, Carla, an okay dancer, young, a little wooden in her movement on the floor. She wore a tempting red silk dress and 3-inch red patent leather heels. A blonde from Brooklyn, Carla smiled when Gaviota greeted her, embarrassed to have been noticed by the great man. Her eyes darted about with self-conscious imprecision. Gaviota's eyes remained riveted on Carla. Marianita's anger seemed to burnish her extraordinary beauty, so that now, close up like this, the very manner in which her lips moved as she spoke to the other women fired Trevor's imagination in ways that none of the other women ever did or ever could. Trevor pondered the consequences of Marianita someday being angry with him and his success at overcoming that anger, so that in the end she would wrap her arms about his shoulders and neck, incline her head back a little, accept his own now swelling lips, and kiss him with all the fury she could muster. Should I ask her to dance? Trevor's own tango had been progressing well enough. He was frequently congratulated by his teachers and the women who danced with him for actually listening to and understanding the music. Without that, you're lost, Trevor felt. He was usually chagrined when he watched other men essay the tango. Few of them really could. They wobbled, lurched, or shuffled. While the dance requires a soul capable of being grabbed, wrestled with, shaped, and freed with complete immediacy, it was the music that provided that kind of conflict. Love, soul, grace, heart, loss. Love, again, the whole thing. Once more, again. But dancing with Marianita Miró. Trevor grumbled to himself, a negative comeuppance. Fear took him. Gaviota and Carla stood in a corner. He seemed to be murmuring at her, his sunglasses shimmering with sensuous intent. Carla smiled, but her eyes were now clouded with the uncertainty of her opportunity and declared the wish for even more attention. After a moment, Marianita strode onto the dance floor, and without any seeming contact between her and Gaviota, the maestro handed his empty paper cup to Carla and joined Marianita. They danced a very slow tango, an occasion that caused the other dancers in the room to hold back, to stand and watch. The change in Marianita's demeanor charged the atmosphere in the room. Suddenly, she was a woman being pursued who wished it so. No longer waving a hand over her shoulder at the grasping gaviota, Marianita now stood in his arms and walked with him intently, not retreating as he advanced, rather showing him that she would be moved only when she wished, and that she wished it so now. She appeared not just to be attracted to Gaviota, but to be driven toward him by the strength of his sensuality, yet challenging him with a sense of authority that was stronger even than his. She supplied the color, the movement, and the sense, Trevor swallowed, of time itself, nearing its own desperate end. He had some more wine. But how could she possibly love a man like this Polito? Hadn't she just been arguing with him? Yes, Gaviota was smooth. Maybe no woman can resist him. Carla herself was jealous, now standing next to Emilio, whose attempts at conversation with her were going nowhere. She pouted. And surely Gaviota knows how to make Marianita feel watched, Trevor thought, wanted and excited. But he also resembled the kind of man who shows up at his daughter's teenage birthday parties and schmoozes all the girls, toying with the frosting-filled spoon in his hand. Trevor recalled his mother's insistence upon manners being more important than anything. His mother, soft, warm, Midwestern and caring, Protestant, PTA. Gaviota, pursuing Marianita in this dance, appeared to have no manners at all. He was sophisticated, yes, but his sense of himself took that sophistication and made it into a kind of Don Juan-like shining of dark, lascivious suggestion. He moved as though Marianita would not dare turn him down, even though she obviously had done so earlier. His sunglasses spit back the light that reflected from them. He would have his way. The tango came to an end, in which Gaviota took Marianita into his arms and embraced her. They reminded Trevor of one of those pillars in old Italian cathedrals that swirl around themselves, earth to heaven, in a spiraling gyre. He sighed as Marianita laid the fingers of her right hand delicately against the back of Gaviota's head. Applause and shouting thundered through the three-cornered hat. Trevor knew that he could never dance like that. So rather than asking himself again how Marianita could possibly care for a guy like Gaviota, Trevor asked himself without much hesitation, how could she possibly care for a guy like me? Go ahead. Emilio, a half hour later, urged Trevor to action. Carla had slowly begun speaking with him, and Trevor had the impression that just now Emilio wanted to continue that conversation with her alone. They had been watching Marianita's chatting with other women. No man had asked her to dance after what they had witnessed with Gaviota, who now sat quietly on a couch, alone, drinking wine. Trevor knew the reason for the men's shyness. He was one of the better dancers in the three-cornered hat, and was himself afraid of what would happen when Marianita slipped into his arms. He envisioned himself as the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz, beset with rust. But unlike Judy Garland, who treats the Tin Man with such affectionate kindness and sympathy, Marianita Miró would leave Trevor struggling alone on the dance floor, the word "no" rumbling from her mouth, her fingers spread out, sparkling into a gesture of frustration at having her time so wasted. He caught her eye and nodded to her, in the way that Emilio had taught him was done in Buenos Aires dance halls. Marianita nodded back, something Trevor had not imagined would be the response. Indeed, she wanted to dance with him, and so, he wondered, what'll I do now? They met on the floor. Trevor took her into his arms, and to his astonishment, she immediately made him look better than he had ever looked. She could follow anything. She held to him as though he were the most handsome compadre in Buenos Aires, and she whispered quietly, amorously at him throughout the music. Listen to the music, Trevor. Don't move your shoulders so much. Wait for me. Wait for me. It was a quick dictatorial lesson in 3.5 minutes. Nonetheless, Trevor felt he was making immediate progress. He especially felt Gaviota surveying them, cigarette in hand, with a look of offended jealousy. He was standing by the side of the dance floor, ignoring Carla, who, it was clear, was suddenly disdainful herself. She was offended by Gaviota because she had been cast aside, but now she had Emilio's attention, and Trevor knew that kindness was one of Emilio's true assets. I'll dance this tango, Trevor thought. Then a couple more. Then I'll ask Marianita out. He attempted remaining loose. Very difficult under the circumstances, when the fear-struck rigidity of every muscle in his arsenal fought against him. But judging from Marianita's not laughing at him, or simply walking from the floor and leaving him out there, he figured he was doing okay. She even caressed the back of his neck. When she had done this with Gaviota on the stage of Carnegie Hall, a quite knowable sigh had come from many parts of the audience. A similar sigh came from Trevor just now, as measured as he could keep it, so as not to make Marianita think he was losing control. They danced a second tango, and Trevor felt himself improving even more, then a third, during which he rehearsed how he would ask Marianita for a date. Movement at the curtain distracted him. A boy, 5 years old, with brown-black lashes of hair peeking out from beneath a Mets baseball cap, wearing a Spider-Man T-shirt, Levi's, and small Nike running shoes, ran into the room, looking around, searching the floor. "Bobby!" Marianita released herself from Trevor's arms and hurried across the floor toward the boy. "Mommy!" A man followed Bobby into the room, causing almost as many heads to turn for him as had turned for Marianita. He paused, enjoying the embrace that Marianita now gave the little boy. In his 40s, he wore a fine black suit, white shirt, and tie of such elegance that Trevor suddenly felt even more like a startup slob. He retreated a few steps, doubt dizzying his thoughts. Had he seen this fellow somewhere? On television, was he a star of stage and screen? Dark-skinned, very slim, with Paris-seeming romantic male bravado, he walked toward Marianita as though she formed the very reason for living itself. "Amir, amorcito." Marianita embraced Amir. "Daddy!" Bobby did too. Trevor turned toward the bar, where Emilio stood with Carla. A large, sympathetic smile decorated Emilio's face. Amir, Marianita, and Bobby danced together, a barely moving tango during which Bobby, being held by both his parents, put his arms around Marianita's neck and lay his head on her left shoulder. The Mets baseball cap fell to the floor, and a few of the onlookers hurried to pick it up. Trevor was not one of them. Moments later, he offered Amir, to whom Marianita had introduced him, a paper cup of Malbec. "Very good dancer," Marianita had said, pointing at Trevor with the thumb of her right hand. Bobby then led her back to the dance floor. "What do you do besides tango?" Amir said as both men watched the dancing. "I've got a startup." "Well, what is it?" Trevor gave a short description of Zowie Collectibles. He was suddenly embarrassed by it. A man of such elegance, evident wealth and confidence as Amir, could hardly care about collectibles, but as the conversation progressed, Amir turned away from the dance floor to listen to Trevor. He wanted even more information, so that Trevor poured a bit more wine into his cup and continued talking. "Sounds fascinating." Amir glanced occasionally toward the dance floor as Bobby, walking backward, led Marianita around by her hands. "I hope so," Trevor smiled. "We're small, just two of us." "That's all right. Somebody funded Yves Saint Laurent in the beginning." "Oh, yes, but whose initial designs in Algeria, you know, where he grew up, were cute little hats for his mother." Amir held the paper cup up before him in a kind of toast to Trevor. "Who's funding you?"
"Me."
"Just you?" "No, my mother. And Emilio over there, my partner." Amir put the cup aside, straightened his tie, and then took a billfold from his inside jacket pocket. "You'll probably need a couple million."
"What?
What are you doing tomorrow?"
"Well, I'm free."
"Here's my card. Come see me tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk some more." The card read Talebi Mortensen, Venture Capital, with an address on Park Avenue and Amir Talebi's name. 3 o'clock?
Jolted into silence, Trevor placed the card in his pocket.
"Bring your business plan," Amir smiled. A few hours later, the dance floor was close to empty. Amir and Marianita had left, but not until Bobby had received a round of applause for his dancing and several kisses and hugs from the women watching.
Emilio had left with Carla. A few couples danced about. The bar was cluttered with empty paper cups, stained plastic glasses, empty bottles, and crumpled up paper napkins. The wood floor before the bar was sticky. Trevor, seated on a couch at the end of the room, had had a little too much to drink. He sorrowed a bit at the love he had sought and lost. The love that little Bobby had won so easily, in which no doubt he was nestled at this very moment. "You can dance, Trevor." Gaviota, too, reclined on the couch. He turned and gestured with both hands open, palms up. The sunglasses lay folded in the palm of his right hand. "I was watching you." He tapped Trevor on the knee. "And don't let anyone," he slurred, "say something different." He sat back, the sunglasses hanging between his knees. "But there are a few things." Trevor sipped from his glass, listening. "A few things. You give me an hour, and Jay, I'll give you the tango." "But what about Marianita?" "No, hermano, she's happy where she is." Gaviota took in a long breath and then let it out slowly as the last couple on the floor finished the last tango of the early morning. "Ay, Dios mío, I wish she wanted me." He sighed once more. "The way she loves Amir. But that will never be for me." He put on the sunglasses and turned toward Trevor. "Or you?"
"For sure."
"Bueno. So you meet me here the day after tomorrow, and I'll show you a few things that will help you, maybe, with someone else who will love you more than Marianita will ever love you. Or me. Or anyone else but Amir." Gaviota looked to the side, his hopes clearly dismayed. "That fortunate man."